Welcome back to the Hawks Talk podcast, your source for everything about the Upper Valley Nighthawks and the NECBL. This is season 3, episode 3, pitching preview. I'm your host Phoebe Winters, joined by co-host Caitlin Beal and our public address announcer Greg Fennell. Caitlin, Greg, how are we doing?
Ready for spring. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to wait probably at least 3 more months for it, but that's okay.
Yes, I'm doing pretty good today. I'm in London now. It's very rainy though, so it is kind of already feeling like spring today, but I could use some sunshine for sure.
We fully
Well,
expect you to be in Jamaica the next week and then maybe on your way someplace in the Caribbean slowly, gradually.
I wish. I wish. Maybe next recording I'll be there. Summer warm.
Well, spring might still be holding out for it, but spring baseball season is back. And players are starting to get into the swing of things as college baseball season kicked off. It started last week, so they're in their second week of games now. And in our last episode, General Manager Matt Wright, he made an interesting point about turnover on the rosters. It is true that with about 4 months until the season starts, the current roster is not set in stone. But I'd still like to take a look at some of the players that have been added to the roster in their schools and how those schools have started to perform in that first week or so of the season. Let's start off with Louisiana Tech. They kicked off their season Valentine's Day weekend with a four-game series against Maine. And as of right now, we have three members of the Louisiana Tech bullpen supposed to make it to the Upper Valley for the 2025 pitching squad. We have Junior Will Croft, Junior Jacob Havern, and Junior Owen Shixnadri. So, Greg and Caitlin, what were your thoughts on Louisiana Tech's opening series and those three pitchers that are supposed to be coming to Upper Valley?
Not knowing any of the guys who are coming back, it's kind of a work in progress. I think it's safe to say. I'm looking at the stats from the first weekend of action, and two of the three guys have seen some playing time. Owen Shixnader being one of them, got one of the starts on the weekend series. Jacob Havern just a little bit of action against a small handful. So the sample size is really kind of small. I'll be curious this weekend. I have a personal attachment to Southern Miss baseball, given the number of Southern Miss players that have stayed with myself and my wife over the length of the Nighthawks. And it's going to be fascinating, not only because of the fact that we have these three kids on the roster who could be important parts of our rotation, but two other guys at Louisiana Tech, Blake Hooks and Nate Kreider, are part of that pitching staff, and they have pitched for the Nighthawks before. So over the course, I would imagine they'll be able to offer some advice on what it's like to be here in summer, what summer ball is like, how strong your bug spray protection needs to be, and the important stuff for this part of the country. So it's kind of early to get a read on what the new guys bring, but I'll be curious to see how they do this weekend against a pretty good baseball program.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this starting series against Maine with 4 wins is definitely, a good sign and a good way to start the season and to start it strong. But yeah, kind of like Greg said, it's kind of hard to see the stats so far, and not all the guys are necessarily playing a ton, and they're rotating through, and a lot could change. But it is interesting that their first game against Maine was a win 14-3, and then by their fourth game against them, it was a 9-8. So definitely getting a lot closer. So definitely seeing a little bit of variety in their game playing and how the guys are working together. So, but I definitely think, having these players on the team could definitely bring, some experience and some good culture to the team,
Yeah, I think it's also definitely interesting that you have three juniors, upperclassmen from the same team coming together to summer ball. It'll be an interesting aspect to how they fit into the culture of Upper Valley and how they help kind of build that just from the standpoint of being upperclassmen and having played with each other before.
Yeah, definitely already having that camaraderie with each other and like knowing some guys coming in. I feel like it'll make the transition easier, and then they can also share their knowledge and their experience with the other guys, especially younger players on the team. So I definitely think that they're coming in with a good perspective.
Well, transitioning from the talk about Louisiana Tech, we have two special guests joining us for today's episode. We've got Marist Baseball head coach Mike Koss and then Upper Valley's pitching coach Max McDowell. So we'll head into those interviews now, starting with Mike Koss. Now I'd like to introduce a special guest to the podcast. We have Marist Baseball's head coach, Mike Koss. Mike, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Thanks for having me, Phoebe.
We're happy to have you here. So, Mike, the Red Foxes kicked off the 2025 season last weekend. You guys had two home games and two away against Long Island and Wake Forest. And then this weekend, you guys are going to compete against William and Mary. What are some of the takeaways from that opening weekend that you're hoping to bring into this weekend series?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously first it was just great to be back on the field, and I felt like the fall and preseason kind of took forever, and we were just kind of chomping at the bit to really get back out there. So it was good. The weather wasn't too great down in North Carolina, but we were able to kind of dodge some rain and just get some good four games in. Obviously not exactly how we wanted to go score wise, but I think a lot of positives, from the hitting perspective, and then also pitchers showed some good things. And kind of knowing too, like, just because it's the first weekend, make sure we're not, hitting the panic button anywhere, and really just getting back to work weekly. But yeah, we're looking forward to, getting down to William and Mary and hopefully dodging some more weather. I think they just got about 4 or 5 inches down there too, so hopefully get three more in this weekend.
Now, I'd like to take a second to highlight two of the players from your team. They're set to come to the Upper Valley this summer. It's Ethan Marzo and Steven Mazza. Let's start off with Steven. He's a junior, and this is his third season as a Red Fox. What can Nighthawk fans expect from Steven, and what have you noticed in terms of his growth as a player?
Yeah, I mean, so Steve's coming off Tommy John right now, so he's in the latter part of his rehab. We should get him back, sometime hopefully in mid-April or so. And he was kind of our ace last year. He started the bullpen at the beginning of the season, but he really transitioned to our Friday night guy, and it was someone that we could really rely on. It's one of those guys that I really trust when he has the ball. I know he's got a lot of baseball IQ and three really good pitches. He'll run the fastball into the low 90s, and his breaking stuff is really good. But I think the growth that I've seen from him, typical with any freshman, he came in and kind of had some command issues, but was really a hard worker. And I think as he kind of matured through his years, like, he really realized that in order to be kind of who he wanted to be, he needed to be in the zone more. And we saw that last year before he, unfortunately tore his UCL and had to get that repaired. But, we're really looking forward to getting him back, kind of in that middle half of the year, which will kind of give us a jolt on the pitching staff. So looking forward to that.
And then for Ethan, it's a name that Nighthawk fans should be familiar with since Marzo was a part of the Upper Valley Nighthawks last season. He's going to be entering his sophomore season at Marist. How has he grown just from this summer coming into this season?
Yeah. From this summer, I mean, he didn't pitch at all his freshman year here at Marist. He redshirted. He, again, similar to Steven, came in, had good stuff, but just had a hard time just consistently being in the zone. And we sent him up to the Perfect Game League, NYCBL as well, to really just get a lot of innings. We wanted him to pitch a lot. One of those things, like, you're only going to really get better as you get more reps. You can only do so much during the middle of the season. There might be some live sessions in there, here and there, but he went up there and threw about 35, 40 innings and really kind of found out a lot about himself, and came back, and the fastball got cleaned up, command wise. Runs it up into to low to mid 90s now, and throwing a lot more strikes than he did. And we've kind of seen the script kind of flip there, where now he's really starting to dominate hitters. And he got his feet wet with his first college outing last weekend, and he'll kind of hit the ground running and continue to get better, through the season. So
What are some things that Ethan and Steven have brought to the culture at Marist that you think might contribute to the culture here at Upper Valley?
yeah, I think it's a little bit interesting. They're kind of two different guys personality wise. I think Ethan's more of the kind of the laid back, funny, goofy guy, and Steve kind of has a little bit more of a serious side to him. Not that that's totally a bad thing, but he's kind of go about your work and kind of no nonsense guy. So it kind of be interesting to see those two personalities. They're kind of on both ends, and see how that kind of mixes in with, obviously the rest of the team, and then the Upper Valley community as well.
So they could potentially be kind of bookends on that
Yeah, I think
spectrum.
a lot of people will probably be in the middle of them, but it'll be interesting where they kind of sway, if they kind of change throughout the summer or not.
And then, so Mike, you actually have an extensive history with Upper Valley. You once played as a Nighthawk, and then you've done some coaching for the Nighthawks, and now you're sitting in a position where you send players to the Upper Valley for the summer. How do you think your playing experience has influenced your summer ball decisions now that you're a coach?
Well, I think honestly, just ever since I did 2 summers as a player in Upper Valley, and really ever since my first summer, being with Noah Crane and just really getting to know him and kind of just clicking with him right away, and talked to Noah, somewhat frequently. He texted me on opening day and said good luck and we're rooting for you. It's kind of like that where I've had the relationship with him for, geez, almost 9 years now, and I believe I was a part of the first ever Upper Valley team ever since they were an expansion team. So it's one of those things, they do it the right way. They're in it for the right reasons. And that's why, honestly, I continue to send guys back and try to honestly send our best players there, because it's one of those things, I want to see them do well. And I also want to see our own players be in a position to not only develop, but get those looks for the next level, whether it be draft stuff, even if it's they're not draft eligible, kind of set them up for that next year, whether they can get into the Cape Cod League, a lot of things that go into it. So it's a really, they run it the right way, and I'm always happy to send more guys up there.
And then having that experience of being a player on the Nighthawks, what kind of advice do you give to your players that you send to the Upper Valley for the summer?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, like I joke with them sometimes. I was like, I had never been to Vermont before I went up there, and I always had this picture in my head that, that in Vermont there was just absolutely nothing and I was going to be bored all summer. And but kind of being on that Vermont New Hampshire border, like, it we always found a way to make it fun, whether off days we were kind of in the river doing rafting stuff or fishing and playing golf on off days. And I still honestly talk to a lot of guys from those 2 teams that I played on, and Keller Bradford, who's down coaching at Southern Miss now. We just talked last night, and still to this day, you kind of form those bonds, and so I tell them to make sure they get acclimated with the community, and the more that you do, the more fun you're going to have, right? If you're just kind of staying in the host family's house all day, you're probably going to be a little bit bored all summer. But be able to get out, see things. If you're a nature guy, there's plenty of stuff to do. But it's one of those things that it's a unique place, and I haven't been back ever since. I think 2019 was my last year up there as a coach, but hopefully maybe get up there this summer to see our guys play too, which would be nice.
And then my last question for you, what was your favorite memory from the Nighthawks? And this can be from your time as a player or as a coach.
Favorite memory, I think. The one thing I always go back to, and I mentioned Keller, and I should mention Adam Chase, who's another good friend of ours that we got along really well. I believe that was 2017 summer. So this was kind of the height of when Game of Thrones was really big and was on TV, and they used to drop a episode every Sunday night, and we would usually play Sunday nights. So we always tell the story. We would, we'd have probably a 6 o'clock game on Sunday night, depending on where we were, if we were home or on the road. So we would kind of hope that we were at either at Keene or in Montpelier. Those were the 2 closest bus rides. But if not, then we'd get back, somewhere around 12 or 1 in the morning, and then we would all actually drive over to Adam Chase's host family, and we'd be watching the new Game of Thrones episode at like 1:30, 2 in the morning. And we still talk about every time that either the spin-offs are on or regular Game of Thrones when that finally ended. But it's one of the weird core memories I have about watching Game of Thrones at like 2 in the morning with the guys, and just talking about it and talking shop. So it's the little things like that in summer ball that kind of go a long way.
Well, thank you so much, Mike. I really appreciate you taking the time to join us on the podcast. I want to say good luck this weekend at William and Mary. Hopefully the weather isn't too bad. Maybe it'll warm up just a little bit. And we really hope to hear from you again soon. We're excited to have Ethan and Steven join us this summer.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Phoebe. I appreciate it. Take care.
Now I'd like to introduce our other special guest for this episode. We've got Nighthawks pitching coach Max McDowell here. Max, how are you doing?
Hey, thanks for having me. Doing very well. Out here in sunny Florida, we got a little bit of a mildly cold day, but it's been nice this past week. Yeah, super excited to get going. Can't believe it's already soon to be March. Looking forward to kind of the group we have coming in this year for the 2025 season. Kind of expecting big things and looking to kind of build upon some of the successes they had last year. So thanks for having me.
So this is going to be your very first summer with the Upper Valley as their pitching coach. What are some of the things that you're looking forward to the most about this summer?
I think summer baseball plays a special role in college pitchers or players in general's development. I know myself personally, it was probably what got me back in love with the game of baseball. I think guys have a really cool opportunity to be able to pitch against talent that necessarily they wouldn't get in conference or even out of conference with the school that they play at. And then guys have the opportunity to be seen by professional level scouts. And I'm most excited for those guys to kind of find a new version of themselves, take themselves back to the fall on campus and earn a role that they're looking to achieve and didn't necessarily have this spring season. I'm also just looking forward to kind of being able to play baseball on a daily basis and be at the field. And that's something being a former player. That rhythm of baseball is a little bit different than in season with school. You know, you have your midweek and you have your weekend games, whereas summer league kind of starts to feel again like my former pro ball experience. That's like kind of what I love about baseball is that everyday feel, showing up to the yard at the first 7 o'clock game with the lights, kind of getting ready around 3, 2:30, and just kind of having a full day dedicated to baseball. So super excited for all that.
And then, since it is your first summer with Upper Valley, would you mind telling the fans how you got involved with the Nighthawks?
So I've been coaching college summer collegiate baseball for 2 years now. And being an East Coast native, born and raised kind of in the Vermont area, New England area. And then I played college baseball at St. Michael's. So that connection kind of runs pretty quickly to the manager, Matt Potts. So he was my head coach in 2019 when I graduated. So, and funny enough, didn't even put two and two together until I got the invite for an interview. Just kind of wrapped up in my own world for a second there. So that was fun. And then talking with him went really well. So that's kind of how it all started. To give a long story short.
And then you said you've been coaching summer ball for 2 years now. What are the other leagues that you've been coaching in, and what was your experience with that?
Yeah, so I coached a team in Royal Oak, Michigan, called the Royal Oak Leprechauns. So they were in the Great Lakes League when I joined them. We got a decent year. It's a decent amount of talent over there. They're mostly kind of, I compare it to the Futures League, it's kind of in the New England area. In terms of talent, we get a lot of Northwestern kind of located their kids where they play or where they're from. So that's kind of the talent base, kind of on the young side. And then we upgraded to the Northwoods League this past year. That was a whole different experience. You play 72 games in 76 days. It's a lot of games. It's a lot of fun. It's definitely a grind here and there. But we had a good year for the majority of the year. It's always tough. Summer ball has this constant thing that you're trying to avoid from a coaching standpoint or a front office standpoint is you're trying to keep players stick around to the end. And that's kind of what we fell into. But I say we had a lot of successes, especially with three of our players getting drafted in that 2024 draft. So that was pretty cool. So that's my collegiate coaching in the summer experience. I coached at a Division III in this past year in 2024 at Framingham State. That was also something that I wanted to get into. Coaching college ball is definitely different than saying coaching high school or just being a pitching instructor at a facility. So I think going forward, this is something that I want to do long term. So I've always found myself doing some sort of role in this space.
Max, show me how you plan to juggle the various balls that are required of a summer baseball coach, from teaching to motivation to, I guess, finding that appropriate mix between making sure these guys get the work that their coaches in college want them to get without overburdening them.
Yeah, I think it starts from communication and trust. Obviously, I'm just going to meet these guys for the first time, and they kind of got to have a little bit of a leap of faith there. But hopefully, just getting to know me on a human level as well as a baseball level will help. But I've had past experiences dealing with anything from strict inning limits, strict pitch type limits to he didn't throw much for us. He's a red shirt. We want him to get as many innings as possible. So making sure that there's some sort of trust there, and the communication between the player and the coach that they have at their respective school is wide open. And then from a motivational standpoint, I'm not to put this wrong, but I'm not necessarily going to be anybody's cheerleader. But my role and how I approach the game of baseball as a coach is I'm there as a resource. I want guys to kind of take it upon themselves to ask me questions, to ask their teammates questions. I feel like I have a lively attitude to the game of baseball that's pretty contagious. So hopefully just by being myself and kind of doing those little things. I'm also a big preacher of kind of what we do pregame, from catch play to bullpens to stuff that involves a little more thinking. And then when you get out there, stay in your flow state and let it come out. I'm always open for questions, always open for input from a player standpoint, from a coaching standpoint. So if anything comes from Matt, constantly kind of checking the ego at the door and making sure we're there to win baseball games and there to kind of develop players so they have opportunities that that they're looking to achieve.
It also adds to the balance question I had in mind. Where do you draw the line in terms of winning baseball games versus getting the work that your college coaches required? And obviously, anybody who's a fan of the team like I am wants to win, but you also have that perspective of it's not necessarily the most important thing in the development of these players.
Yeah, I equate it to minor league baseball, right? So you're trying to develop guys and send them up through the ranks as a minor league kind of coach. So, and maybe winning isn't on the forefront of what you're trying to achieve, but I think winning teaches you a lot about the game of baseball and how to be a teammate and how to be just an all-around good baseball player. It'll definitely raise your IQ. I mean, it's not fun to be in a clubhouse where kind of losing is contagious, for sure. I think if you do the little things right and you focus on kind of the development sides of things, I've never really seen it go the wrong way. In terms of, I think winning just kind of starts to come naturally, and you start to be less outcome focused, which you're more focused about kind of quantifying success on your own end, from a pitching standpoint, making good pitches. Like, that's the best thing we can do is have a plan, execute that plan. I mean, the guy may hit it off the wall, he might strike out, swing and miss, ground out. You know, once you let go of that baseball, kind of your job is done, as long as you've put the amount of thought and effort into it that you can.
Have you already
So
reached
from
out to the guys who are going to come up here this summer?
I have not reached out to much of them yet, just because most of them are in that D1 space. I was looking, and then we have one D3 player on the roster at the moment and one JUCO. And I know their season just started. Division one season just started this past week. I kind of like guys to kind of think about what they're doing in their season before I kind of throw thoughts about summer ball on them. But I think once we get into kind of that April space, I'm going to make sure that's something I do every year is reach out and kind of check in and just see if I could do anything for them if they have any questions. So then maybe they ask something or talk to the skip, and then maybe they forgot about something so they can approach me. So that's kind of what I usually do, and seems to go pretty well, especially for those guys who maybe are coming from a long ways, first time away from home or whatever it might be. Yeah.
And then, have any of these players' stats started to catch your eye? I know you said that D1 baseball just started last week.
Yeah, I mean, I have Brendan written down. He's at Stetson. I believe his last name is Walker, or I hope I'm saying that right.
Yep, he's a relatively local kid too, being up from Woodsville.
So he for the most part, in terms of consistency and getting innings at a decent school in the A-Sun Conference, is one that jumped out to me. He's a junior, which I mean, bringing that kind of experience and even in that age group alone, I mean, there's a lot of growth that happens just by kind of keep turning over the clock as a college player. So to have him coming in as junior, soon to be senior, and then having his first, I think his first outing so far was against Michigan. He went 3.1 innings and didn't give up a run. So that's a decent start to his year. So his numbers so far in terms of this college season jumped out to me the most. But then just from a pitching staff standpoint, to have four returners kind of in that even junior, senior, sophomore range is something to look forward to in terms of kind of age on the staff and then also experience. And then from the staff standpoint, right now we're full, so that's also very cool. In terms of, I think we got 21 guys on the staff at the moment. I
Is
could be
that
wrong about
pitching
that number.
roster split between guys who are going to have only part seasons with us versus full seasons?
Don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure we only signed full seasons. I've been in the works trying to get some guys to come through from the connections that I have back in that Royal Oak area, or even just in that central U.S. area. And I was told we only signed. This is something that I may be wrong on, but I'm pretty sure we only signed fulls at the moment. And I could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure it's just fulls. And these guys are making a full year, a full summer commitment to us, hopefully. And anything can happen, as you probably have
That's
seen.
got to be a lot of juggling you have to do when you're dealing with 21 different pitchers. That's a lot larger than your average college roster.
I'm not quite sure if these guys will all make it. That's the one thing. They may all be intended to come. And then right now, I mean, I'm getting my list from the website. And so we might be preparing for some guys not to make it in May. So I'm not quite sure what that'll look like. I'm always expecting it to look somewhat different based on my experience in the past. And I've never seen what I get around this time of the year be exactly what ends up there, even on day one. So, and hopefully these guys get to play a little ball into June, you know. So hopefully we get to kind of figure that out as well. It's a happy problem to have for sure.
And then, Max, you mentioned there's four returners on that roster. How important is it to have returners when you're building a culture in the bullpen? And what are some aspects that you want to build in the culture of the bullpen?
I think with anything, I mean, if you look at it from the major league level and then trickle down, like it kind of starts with the guys who have been there and done that, and kind of bring that energy that maybe a newcomer may be unsure of, you know, how does he fit in? Whereas you have guys who've kind of already had some roles and understand, now nothing's given, but it's all earned. But to say that we got some guys who have been familiar with the manager, Matt Paz, or whatever it might be, is a big help. And I think from a bullpen culture perspective, like I'm looking for guys who want the baseball, and want the opportunity, whatever it might be. Granted, we're going to get some guys who are firm starters or firm, hey, I'm a back end guy or whatever it might be, and they have the opportunity to kind of stay there and earn that, especially if they find themselves with continuous success. Also, like, coming from a school where the coach is like, hey, this is someone we want to be our midweek or weekend starter. So, like, getting him starting opportunities is something we're looking for. So, I mean, that's exactly kind of the input that I would be very open to, and would definitely follow that plan coming from a college coach. So, but then from the bullpen culture, like, just guys who want the baseball, because they're gonna have roles, especially if they're on the younger side, where they may get a start here as a spot start. They may get a relief in the middle, and then you might find yourself at the back end. And kind of being multi-dimensional with who you are as a pitcher is super. I mean, if you're trying to get to the next level, it's super beneficial, especially if you're looking to maybe level up in terms of whatever it might be, from a mid-major to a Power Five, or from a D2 to D1. If you can fill multiple roles, and then get your foot in the door in some way, and then earn the role you're looking for, that's huge. And so I'm just looking for a bunch of guys who want to be able to kind of go out and accomplish that.
Interestingly, Max, I see from your St. Mike's player bio that not only did you play baseball at South Burlington, you played hockey as well. What position
I
did you
did.
play there, and does your hockey experience inform you in any way as a coach of a different sport?
I've never been asked this question. I don't think everyone's ever brought up hockey. It's a good question. Yeah, I think being a multi sport athlete definitely helps your mental side of things. It definitely gives you a different gear that some people may not have from a player's perspective, from a coaching perspective. Like, there's just anything you can get in terms of experience that gives you some sort of new angle on a moment or an opportunity, I think is huge. I think hockey has a cool aspect to it where it kind of reflects baseball in a little bit. And I played forward in high school, so kind of being the attack and kind of having a good forecheck and kind of taking that into being a pitcher and constantly trying to stay on the attack, even though you are kind of in that defensive space, obviously, right? You're on defense, but you're the only, in my opinion, the only defensive player on the offense, where you should go out there and compete over the plate as much as you can. That's kind of my pitching philosophy in a nutshell, is we got to be able to compete over the plate early. My biggest and favorite stats at the moment are first pitch strike percentage and then 2 of 3 percentage. So in your first three pitches against the batter as a pitcher, two of those first strikes is huge. And kind of what that says about how you get outs, I think, immediately translates into finding your way in that success rate. And at the end of the day, I think pitching can be super analytical, but you always have to have this feel for how your ability plays off of itself, especially with being who you are. If you're a tall, steep, kind of over the top righty, working east to west, or working north south, you'll find one plays better to who you are, the pitcher, than another. I'm kind of running off
Which
on
is
a tangent there. Tangent.
the bigger thrill? Scoring a goal, striking a guy out looking.
Oh man, there's nothing like scoring a goal in hockey, especially. I mean, I saw Burlington. We had a good amount of people who were showing up to games, so it felt like. It almost felt like a college atmosphere, but I, being a baseball guy through and through, there's something about getting a guy kind of that freeze on the outer third, especially with a heater and that sound of a glove, especially the end of inning. You know, that's a great feeling. Tight ball game. I've been lucky to have a few of those in my playing career. Man, that's a great question, but I think I'm gonna have to go with that punch out feeling.
Are you
No.
keeping up with USA Hockey?
Yeah, that was a tough game to watch last. That was a tough one. Man, McDavid is just so explosive. I can't. I just every time he touched the puck, my heart sank. And sure enough, but I thought they played a hell of a tournament and really like growing the game, whether it's growing baseball or growing hockey. I think that's super important. And like other leagues should kind of take notice. And I mean, obviously the World Baseball Classic is huge in that way too, but putting on a jersey that has your country on the front of it has to be a super cool feeling for sure.
All right, well, I think that's all we have for you today, Max. Thank you again so much for joining us on the podcast. We're looking forward to meeting you in person this summer again to work with you then. Have a good rest of your day. Thanks again for taking the time out of your day to join us here.
Yeah, thanks. I really enjoyed meeting you guys. Can't wait to meet you in person and kind of go throughout the season. We'll hopefully be talking a lot. I appreciate it. Thank you guys.
Bring some warmth when you come on north.
You got it. You got it. Have a good one.
And now it's time for Hunting for Answers. Last episode, we asked you, the fans, to send us your burning questions about the upcoming season by either messaging the Instagram, which is at UV Nighthawks, all lowercase, or giving us a shout out on Twitter at UV Nighthawks with the hashtag Hunting for Answers. And that Twitter handle is capital U, capital V, capital N, Nighthawks, with the hashtag Hunting for Answers. We received some great questions from you all, and we're excited to answer some of them for you today. Starting off, we have a question from former Nighthawk Harry Genth. Harry would like to give a shout out to his former Nighthawk teammate, DJ Pacheco. And his question is, why is DJ a big leaguer? So Pacheco was a member of the 2024 Upper Valley Nighthawks, and he's a senior at the University of Richmond. Last season, Pacheco led the Spiders with a .355 batting average and was second on the team with 22 multi-hit games. Greg, I'll let you start off the answer to this one since you actually had the opportunity to watch Pacheco play in person last summer. But Caitlin, feel free to add on to what you think makes Pacheco a great player too.
I think what impressed me about him was that over time, and by that I mean maybe 2 to 3 weeks, he was able to get a feel for wooden bat baseball, and also a league where home runs are sometimes hard to come by depending where you play. I've always considered Max Field to be a pitcher's ball field. The wind does not tend to blow out. When it does tend to blow, it's across the field, left to right, maybe out to right field. So if you blow one over the left field fence, you're really hitting the ball hard. And he picked that up pretty quickly. Also last year, he was a clutch performer when the team really needed it. He got into a bit of a home run race until the end of the season, had from what I see here, 4 home runs in the last 8 games before I think injuries took him down for the rest of the summer. So when the Nighthawks needed a big hit and a big extra base hit, DJ was often the person who did that. He was pretty much an everyday player. I think 33 games out of the 44, and that doesn't count, obviously, the last week and a half after he left the team. So if those are his qualities, he's going to be a very valuable member of the Spiders this year, and perhaps there's something professional beyond that.
Well, that concludes this week's segment of Hunting for Answers. Thank you again for your question, Harry, and good luck at Haverford this season. Fans, please keep submitting questions to the Instagram at UV Nighthawks. That's all lowercase UV Nighthawks, or on Twitter at UV Nighthawks using the hashtag Hunting for Answers. And again, that Twitter handle is capital U, capital V, capital N. UV Nighthawks using the hashtag Hunting for Answers. We'd love to get a couple more of your burning questions to answer before the season starts. And with that, that will conclude season 3, episode 3 of the Hawks Talk podcast, Pitching Preview. I want to give a huge thank you to Mike Koss and Max McDowell for joining us. And thank you to everyone for tuning into this episode. Caitlin, Greg, and I have a lot of excitement planned for the podcast this season. I want to thank Caitlin Beal and Greg Fennell for joining me on the podcast. I'm Phoebe Winters, and this has been the Hawks Talk Podcast.